Maybe we need to do a 5-minute break more often. Everybody's pretty social right now, JT. Right. Everybody's talking each other's arms off. All right, so as JT already took most of our stories and told you guys during the service, we just got back from Puebla, Mexico again, and we had an awesome trip. I'm going to stand before you guys today and tell you the same thing I've told you several times. This may be my third time to stand up here and tell you kind of our vision for our partnerships in Mexico. So, like I said, you guys have already heard this, but I just want to remind you guys and remind our church what our purpose is in working in Puebla. Our overall vision is to empower and encourage the pastors, the church members, and the people of Puebla, Mexico, specifically those in the mountains surrounding a city called Zacatlan. Through our two trips, some of the same people went both times. Myself, JT, and the Andersons have been twice. We're just constantly encouraged and humbled by the existing ministries in Mexico. It is obvious to us that God's working throughout the world with or without us. And we're just thankful that we can jump in and be a part of it. We understand God's supremacy throughout the world, and He is going to see people saved whether we go and share or not. But we're so thankful that we get to be a part of the sharing process and get to learn from a different culture what Christianity looks like there. One of the main things that we are blessed with is that we are blessed to go to a place where there is an existing ministry in place. There is already, holy cow, there is already 8 churches in Puebla, or in the area. The closest city, we're no longer saying Zacatlan. San Miguel. San Miguel is the closest kind of village to where we're at. There's already 8 churches existing there. So we do not have the task of going and reinventing the wheel in San Miguel, but we get to join these existing churches and work alongside them. So that makes our job a lot easier. Our goal is to create self-sustaining ministries where if we never go back again, the ministry is going to exist and continue without us. We hope and pray that we can go 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a year, maybe eventually have somebody that lives there permanently or semi-permanently. But we want ministries that are not dependent on Freshwater Springfield to keep going, to keep sending money, to keep sending teams. We want the ministry to exist like it did before us and continue after us. Because maybe there's a time that God calls us to a different part of the world, and we don't want it to be that the churches fall apart without us there. So we're very careful that everything we do is something that can be reproduced by the pastors and the church members that are already there. So the process we use this time, and David, you're going to talk a little bit about storying, correct? The process we used this time was we taught stories from the Bible. Basically, the story we taught was from creation to Christ, the whole story of the Bible. Just like in America, and a little more extreme, if we were to go door-to-door and hand out Bibles, a lot of the people, even if they can read and write, may not understand the story of the Bible just from having a Bible handed to them and read through it. There's some of us that would admit that if we were handed a Bible and were asked to read through it, that we may not pick out the main themes that stick out through the Bible. This is compounded because in the area that we're working with, many of the people cannot read or write. So to just hand them a Bible is even more intimidating, and the Santa Biblia, the Spanish Bible, is written in a very formal language, which is difficult for even experienced Spanish speakers. So we taught the pastors the creation of Christ story, and this is something that we asked them to memorize, and they did very successfully, and something that they can share with people and hopefully pass on multiple times to more people. Well, we gave them the picture that if they share with 2 people, there's 2 people that may accept Christ. If those 2 people share with 2 people, we can just see how that grows exponentially very, very quickly. So, as of now, that's kind of our strategy, and like I said before, it's something that can be reproduced time and time again. some of the pastors immediately asked us, what other stories do you have? When are you going to tell us more stories? Where did you get these, or how did you decide on what stories to use? And we're able to quickly point and say, hey, we didn't make this up. The stories we use are used by the IMB and other missional organizations. And we're able to tell them that people way more qualified than us chose these stories from the Bible and kind of put them together in a way that's easy to cross different cultures and translations. So if you are interested in going on a trip in the future, there's really not a ton of pressure on you and what you need to do while you're there, because our goal is that we will go and facilitate the ministry alongside the pastors. They'll be the ones doing the teaching. They'll be the ones doing the training. We're just there, like JT said, to encourage, to help out where we can, maybe provide the funding for meals and different stuff to draw the gathering, draw the people to the church or wherever we're at. And that, you know, that takes a lot of pressure off us. And we kind of realized that when we got there, that we were, you know, going into it pretty nervous. But once we got going, once we told the story initially, we were just there to kind of observe and see what God was going to do. And as you'll see, he did some very awesome things. We reminded them time and time again, like JT said, that our church is just like theirs, that we are a young church. Some of their churches have been in existence a lot longer than ours even has. And we asked them to pray for us in the same way that we promised that we'd pray for them. We told them that we struggle with evangelism, that we have a neighborhood that's very close to our church that is full of lost people that have no understanding of Jesus Christ. And for us to walk into that neighborhood and share the gospel can be intimidating. I know it is. I said for myself, it's very intimidating for me to walk into that neighborhood and go door to door and share the gospel. So we ask that they would pray for us in the same way that we're praying for them. And like we said over and over again, our goal is to work shoulder to shoulder with these people and hand in hand and encourage them and hopefully be encouraged to continue the ministry here in Springfield and in Puebla. JT mentioned, as I told you, we were constantly humbled through this experience. And one of the ways I was humbled most was one of the translators that we had. JT mentioned him. His name is Fernando, and he'll be in some of these pictures here in a minute. I don't have him in any of the pictures that correspond to my part, but I'll point him out to you when he shows up. I was just blown away by this guy. Fernando was probably in his 50s. He had worked in the ministry overseas for 38-some years, 35, 38, 40, something along those lines, and he had visited 84 countries. His ministry was, I forget the name of it, but they traveled on a ship, and they would go nation by nation. They'd pull their ship into the port, let down the gates. They had vehicles on their ship. They would travel off the ship and share the gospel from port to port all the way around the world. So I was just blown away that God provided for us in a way that we are there. We have very limited missions experience. We show up with what we think are awesome stories to share, which they worked well. But our translator has led probably hundreds, thousands, ten thousands of people to the Lord. And he's our translator. And he's there just to share the limited experience that we have with these people. And, you know, that's kind of been my experience this whole Mexico thing, is that God is working so far beyond our power, that we have such a limited scope of what God is doing in Springfield, in Mexico, and throughout the world. So that was my biggest takeaway, and I went longer than I said I would, but who's up next? Yep. Oh, yeah, I got two pictures here. The first one, this lady on the right, her name is Carmen. And she is a lady that accepted Christ while we were practicing our storytelling techniques. The lady on the left is one of the pastor's wives. And we were able to experience exactly what our goal was for the Mexican people, the Mexican church members, to share the gospel. Not us going out sharing the gospel, but them sharing the gospel with their people. And the lady, Carmen, accepted Christ through that. The next picture is two pastors and two church leaders practicing their stories together. They're sharing, and we'll tell you a little bit about the key changes in a little bit, but they're sharing the creation of Christ story, practicing with each other. And I was just blown away by this picture. It gives you a full scape of the landscape and everything that's going on there as they're working, preparing to go out and share with the lost people in the mountains. So, that's all I got. You up? Here we go.
All right, real quick, you'll see the keychains there, that previous slide there, the guy's holding it in his hand. The story that we helped them learn was, it's a long story. We hope that they can tell it in 6 to 8 minutes, but really it's difficult to tell. And it's not that the content's new or anything, but it's just that being able to tell it in a sequential order to make sense can be difficult. So we made these keychains up. He's got the little white thing, and the guy sitting on the rock right there. It's broken down into 12 different steps. And so it kind of helps it, the first part is Most High God, and it goes into creation and so forth. And so that's just kind of a reminder to them as they were telling the stories about where they're at progressively. But go ahead and go to my next slide there. But one of the things that through both of these trips that I've been on that God continually shows me is just places where my faith is really lacking. There's things that I know to be true. I know that God uses insignificant people that feel that way or feel insufficient, and he uses them to do big things. But whenever I put myself in that equation, I just doesn't ring true for me. Like, I think, well, there's no way I can do that. There's no way he can use me in a way. For example, there are mission teams that are called to go and support and be encouraging. Well, for this trip, that was not really the cause. We were called specifically to help assist with door-to-door evangelism. And the closest that I've come to door-to-door evangelism is handing out flyers in Tom Watkins. So how is God possibly going to use me to be effective here? Little irony of this that I know that the Mexican people didn't know is that I'm not a very good evangelist. So that was the problem I was facing going into these trips. But as you'll see, we went in here, we didn't know how this was going to work with the pastors, how they're going to receive this. Were they going to be, I know if you told these same stories to people here in the United States, most of them would kind of shut it off. It wouldn't be received necessarily as well. But when we got there, we were amazed at just how proactive they were. They were on the edge of their seats. They were listening. They wanted to learn. His name is Alfonso. He's the guy that founded the church back in 1978, and he is looked to as kind of the Apostle Paul of the area, so to speak. And here he is after we'd gone there. We did a lot of hard work. We broke him down into, you'll see the papers on the podium there. We broke them down into 12 sections. We said, we don't have to tell the story verbatim, word for word. This is a story that you guys already know. Here are the topics. So the first one is Most High God. What do you know about God? And so we listed all things that they knew about God. What do you know about creation? What do you know about God and man together? This is the different topics, and had them list all the things that they already knew about the story. And then we went through and said, well, what are the three most important things? And so they kind of created their own story. And here's a guy who's been around the gospel way longer than I have, up here taking notes just to make sure he had it right. It was that important to him. And so just as I was so concerned that we weren't going to be sufficient enough to do this, God was coming through in amazing ways. We started to break them apart into small groups. So we had them do a whole group. We talked about different ways to go door-to-door, the importance of going in and with more than one person together, just different things, how you can initiate conversations. Then we had them practice in groups of four. And this is where we really started seeing God work in some big ways. Just practicing in groups of four, we had Alfonso was in a group with his nephew. And Alfonso came and grabbed me and said, hey, can you come join us for a little bit and practice in our group? We only have three. I said, sure, yeah. So I went over there. And just practicing in our group of four, Alfonso started to share his story, started to tell his creation of Christ story with his nephew there. And his nephew was probably 40s, late 30s maybe, something like that. And I'm listening here. I know enough Spanish to know what he's saying a little bit, but I'm watching his nephew, and just the tears start just rolling down his eyes, just rolling down his face. And Alfonso just keeps going. And Alfonso's in the zone. He's just telling the story, and his nephew is just beginning to weep. And at the end of it, he accepted Christ right there, just listening to the stories being practiced in a group of four. Same thing happened later that afternoon. Ubaldo, we've talked about him quite a bit. He is kind of he's the head pastor, and that's right there. There's Lincho, was that his name? Did I say that right? Lincho is the nephew's name. There he is right there. There's Fernando, kind of the guy with the glasses right there on the far right on the top side. He was our transfer, the one Ethan was mentioning earlier. Later that afternoon, Ubaldo his son attended the conference, and his son was, I don't know how he was, 15 maybe, 15, and brought a friend with him, another young guy, and they were in a group of four together, and just, again, this is a very non-official, just go out, find some place, go practice your story, practice telling your testimony along with the story, and Ubaldo's son started practicing telling his creation of Christ story. And his friend was not a believer. And after hearing the story, and the very last part of that is you throw out an invitation. And he accepted. And then he made a public profession of faith to the entire conference right there. Just things like this. Then we decided, that's the man right there. Ubaldo's son's in the far right. And then I think he's holding a tamale. I'm not sure what that is. Drinking coffee, of course. And then the young man that got accepted Christ is there in the middle, too. Umberto, thank you. That's his name. All right, so after that, after we had it, we broke them into, after we got done with all the practicing, we had them practice the story many, many times. The final day, and I was sick this day. I get sick every third day I go to Mexico. So I don't know what the problem is, but nobody else gets sick but me. I was in the van curled over, but Ubaldo lined up several practice houses. These are just practice homes, nothing that was, you know, supposed to be real evangelistic here. Just, here are some homes, go practice at them. We were not going to be telling the stories. We're just kind of walking along, following. They were going to go out to the stories. And they even prefaced before they went to the houses, saying, look, I'm trying to learn a different way to evangelize. I'm just going to practice the story, and you can just, would you mind just to listen for a few minutes? Just even preface it like that. And no testimony, no nothing real big on it, and just telling the story of creation to Christ, and two more people accepted Christ. And those, how many homes we visit? How many homes altogether? 15? 15 homes. So for me, it's encouraging because I know that whenever this catches fire, and it will, and they start doing this for real, when they make a day of just going house to house, there's no doubt in my mind that there's big things are going to happen here. Another thing I like to talk about is right here. We broke them down into, Daniel and I took the married pastors and their wives. JT and Ethan took the single pastors. And one thing that I wanted to share with you all that was kind of a new thing for me was this concept of a heart language. You know, and I've heard of people being bilingual and things like that, just knowing two languages. And obviously one's probably more dear to your heart than the other one. But I really didn't really understand the concept of a heart language. These people all speak Spanish, obviously, but their more native tongue is this language called Nahua. And so when Daniel and I had this group over here, here are the married pastors and their wives, and we were going around. This was kind of in the beginning parts. Can you share the first part of the story? Who can share the first part of the story? Who can share the second part of the story? We're going around in a circle doing this. Finally, we'd practiced so much, they had it down so well that they were going and giving the whole thing. And then I hear somebody in the corner say, you know what would be great? If one of us could tell this story in Nahua. And I say, well, why don't we do that? Is there anybody who can tell this story in Nahua? Let's give it a try. And this guy, Benancio, he said, well, I'll give it a try. And so he stands up, and keep in mind, this is only half of the room. The other singles are on the other side of the room practicing. And there's, you know, background noise and voices going on while he's standing up and talking. But when he gets up and begins to speak in Nahua, you could have heard a pin drop. I mean, it shut the place down because you started seeing people start nodding their head, crying. They've heard the story 20,000 times already now, but now they're hearing it for the first time in Nahua, and it's all of a sudden registering in a whole different way. And it was the first time that I'd truly understood, well, that's what it means when they say this in their heart language. This is what they really, it really sinks into their heart, and it means something more to them. So for them, they, you know, a year ago, they got the New Testament in Nahua, which is huge. And I know that when these stories take hold and they start to tell it in their own native heart language, it's going to be even more impactful too. So that is what I've got. I don't know. Danielle, you next?
Good morning. My name is Danielle. I'm David's wife, for those of you that don't know me. And I'm going to talk a little bit this morning about some of the stuff that we took away from the trip. And the first thing I'd like to talk to is just the amazing generosity of the culture. David mentioned we did the house-to-house visits. Every house we walked up to, we were either invited into the house, which you could almost touch wall-to-wall, and they would make room, or they would bring chairs outside for us to sit in. And I just thought, wow, I don't do that. And, you know, the houses, some of the houses we went to, they were strong Catholics, or they already had a faith that they practiced, and they still invited us in. And I think about how when the Jehovah Witness comes to my house and I pretend I'm not home, you know, I should invite her in and pull out a chair and have a conversation. And so that experience really touched me. And also just the selflessness. The picture I have up here is of the women preparing food for the 50 and the 25 children that they prepared lunch and dinner by hand every day on an open flame fire, the pot over here, and then they would hand make these tortillas. They ground the corn, they made the flour, they prepared the dough, and then they made the tortillas every day. And this room was filled with smoke. When we walked up there to see how things were going on, we left in about a minute was all we could do because our eyes were on fire. Jessica and Laura had kids' rooms back there, and their clothes smelled so heavily of smoke, it was all we could smell on the airplane ride home. And I just kept thinking, these women were in there for 2 days. And Consuela, she's the one stirring the meat that's cooking in the pot there over on the right. She expressed to me several times what a pleasure she had preparing food for us. And I just thought, how could that, there's nothing pleasurable about that experience. That would be excruciating to me. But every time I saw her, you know, she just had a smile on her face. When we arrived in the mornings, she'd prepared coffee for us and would bring it out. And we complimented the coffee mug one morning. And she said, you know what? I have these coffee mugs at home. I don't want to give you this one because it's the church's. But next time you come back, I'm bringing you a coffee mug from my house for you to have. We said, no, Consuela, you don't, you know, you don't have to do that. And she said, I want to. I would be honored to give you my coffee cup. Just things like that. The generosity was amazing. On the next slide, one thing I wanted to share about also that impacted the team was the powerfulness of the testimonies. These people have lived incredible lives. All three of the women that had a chance to share testimonies. There was actually four that shared, but Irene stood up. We were actually playing a newlywed game, and we were trying to get them to be silly. We were trying to get them, if they lost, to say something silly or embarrassing about themselves, and David gave an, what was your example? Oh, yes, when he accidentally told a room full of Honduran men he was pregnant. Embarazada instead of embarrassed. So we were trying to get them to be silly and goofy, and they just couldn't do it. And Irene stood up and shared a testimony about how she was sick for almost 2 years. She'd seen every physician. She felt horrible. She was bankrupting her family. Her son had given up on the chance that they would find any medical help, and she was just falling to pieces. And she said it just got to a point where she just had to give it to God because she had tried everything. And she said the pain was just excruciating. And during that process, she became a believer. And just at the end, when she'd sought out all the medical help that they could afford, she gave it over to God. And she was now a believer, and she trusted in God. And she said, there's just nothing else I can do. And while she's sharing her testimony, Alfonso, the gentleman that David spoke about, tears are streaming down his face. And I am just thinking, wow, he is so compassionate. Like he just, you don't ever see men cry there. And he is just letting the tears flow. Well, it turns out during the time that she became a believer and shared her story and was healed, he was on a 120-day fast for her village. And he only made 110 of those days because he had to be hospitalized because he was really sick. He's a diabetic. And I just thought, oh my gosh, the power in that. He just was praying for that area, and she happened to be going through this at the same time. He was actually praying for a different man that lived in the village that was going through some stuff, but she lived there in the same village that he was fasting for. Florencia, who's down there on the bottom, she is married to Barnabé. She shared a testimony about after giving birth to their youngest daughter, she had to have a C-section, and she was very ill, was in the hospital for 8 days, came home, and for 8 days her husband missed work because she couldn't move the left side of her body. She had had some sort of injury, nerve injury during the C-section process, and she couldn't move anything on the left side. And she said on day 16, her husband said, "I've got to go to work. We have no money. We have no food." He was a woodworker, so he would go and build furniture to sell, and that was their income. And she said, and tears are streaming as she's telling me this, she said, "I begged him not to leave. And he said, I have to go. And he left me there with our four-year-old and our newborn. And the four-year-old said, 'Mommy, I'm hungry.' And I couldn't get out of bed." And she said, "I prayed to God that he would help me get out of bed and make breakfast. And he did." And she said, "You know, I just got to the point where I couldn't rely on anything else. There was nobody else to depend on. I was there by myself and I had to give it to God. And God took care of me and God brought me through that." Maria up there on the top, she shared a similar story where she couldn't have children. And they had tried all of the man medicines. They'd been to all the doctors. And she felt she was going to lose her marriage over it. Because in that culture, it's very important to have children. They kind of help. They take care of you as you age. And she said she got to the point where her and her husband Antonio just prayed about it and decided to give it to God. And they now have three kids. So just every woman that I had a chance to speak to just had amazing, amazing testimonies. And that was so powerful to me. They have to rely on God. They don't have the extra resources we have. Which brings me to the fourth testimony of Letitia. And then I wanted to speak a little bit about barriers. Letitia's testimony, she was so touched and so emotional, I couldn't understand anything she said. And I didn't want to call a translator over there because our translators were male. And I felt really bad about it because all I could do was kind of nod my head and pray for her in English. And without really expressing the frustration to JT, he talked about on the plane ride home the power of presence and how just being there is powerful. And so I just wanted to say, if any of you feel called upon, but you feel like you can't go because you don't speak Spanish, or there's that language barrier there, please don't let that hold you back. Because there were definitely times I understood nothing, but just being there, being a shoulder to cry on, was still beneficial for them. Who knows when before those women had been given a chance to share their testimony. Another barrier I wanted to touch on real quick is children. I know a lot of us here in this church are parents. And you may feel like, I don't want to go because I can't be away from my children. It would be too hard to be away from our children. And many of us up here left children at home. And it was hard at times. And I wanted to share this picture my parents sent. The kids had drawn it. And it, can you see under there? It says, "I love you, Mom and Dad. I'm crying," is what it says in the pink. You know, and those are the things that it's just like, oh. But then right below that, it says, "God is for real and Jesus is for real." And so during that point of being away, even though it was hard on the kids, they knew we were away for a reason. And they knew we were away to share the story of Jesus with non-believers. And life groups were able to help put together the keychains, and the kids helped in that process. And we were able to come back and say, "You know those keychains that you complained about cutting out and putting together? Two people came to know the Lord through that, or four." So if you feel like leaving your children is a barrier for you, but you feel like God's really putting it on your heart, then I challenge you to pray about that a little more, because it may even end up being an amazing experience for your children. I think that's it.
Well, it's really good to be able to come up here and listen to their stories, because I wasn't a part of what they were doing. And so I didn't even know half the stuff they were telling me, because we were upstairs with the kids. And from the very beginning, I was like, oh, I'm going to be by myself with 20 plus kids. And we prayed at the beginning and like, well, I guess I'm just supposed to be by myself and we'll just work it out. The day we came and talked to you guys, what was it, 10 days before we left, something like that, Laura stepped up and said, "Hey, why don't I just come on this trip?" And so together we got to teach these kids. And we did. We had like 20, 25 kids in a small room. But it was so good to go in upstairs through the smoke where we couldn't even barely open our eyes because we couldn't see. We taught these kids. And while they were teaching the creation of Christ story, we were teaching the creation of Christ to the kids. And we broke it down into four sections, right around 12. And so we spent the first day just hammering it into their heads. And we would take breaks throughout the day, and we would, this is one of the days that we were teaching them. We would take breaks, we'd go outside and we'd play, and we would just love on these kids. And then the next thing you'll know, they'll be like, is it time to go upstairs and do craft again? We're like, sure, let's go. And so we would go back upstairs and we would recap the story and we hit on the next craft part that we were going to do. We first started with the creation and we'd made a book. And then the second part was we did a bookmark for him, and we did the butterfly to represent new life. And then we just kept continuing doing that. And our last craft on Friday was our bracelets. And we taught them what the colors mean of the bracelets. And we were running out of things to do with these kids because from 9 to 6 was us with the kids. So we decided to take them out one by one, me and the translator, and ask them, what does the black mean? What does the red mean? What does the white mean? And I didn't even need to know the Spanish translation between it by the end of the time because they were telling us what they meant. They messed up on the green and the white a couple times. So we brought them all back in and went over again, and we did it again, and they memorized it. And so the next day, JT's like, do you think any of our kids can go up there and tell everybody what the colors mean or what the story was? So we started practicing in the front, and there's three of them because I couldn't get any of them to do it. And the three of them told the stories of the beads. And JT's like, can we practice again? And I was expecting them to practice the beads once again. And they just began to tell the creation to Christ story. And they had it almost to a T. I mean, they messed up a little bit. But for them to know they were probably 8 to 12-year-olds, three of them, to tell that story brought tears to my eyes because we hadn't seen them for 12 hours, and they were able to tell the story once again. And so they got up, and they all wanted to go up once again, and they all stood up there and told the whole congregation about the creation of Christ story. So we know that little kids can tell the story. You don't have to know the Bible back and forth. Knowing the creation of Christ story at an 8-year-old can tell it, so we can tell it. That day, we already did all of our crafts the day before. We're like, we don't know what we're going to do. So we luckily had our lesson book from back, and we just started to tell that story, and we would tell the creation story again and help them memorize it. And we had some craft items left over, and we did those. And then we thought we were going to go and tell the stories with all these guys, but they decided that it wouldn't be a good idea. So we're like, okay, we'll figure it out. And so at lunchtime, one of the little boys kept coming up to our hobby, which was our translator, and says, is it time to go back upstairs to do crafts? Like, this little guy. No, it wasn't this little guy. Yeah, he was the one that told the story. And so we would find another craft to do with the little craft supplies that we had left, but we really just enjoyed being there, being with the kids and playing with them, playing soccer, and getting to know them. We didn't catch very many of their names because they're
different.
Very, very different. So, but we did have a blast with them.
The guy in the back, that's Javi, that was our translator, he like saved us through the trip. He was awesome with kids. Awesome. He got kind of frustrated there for a couple minutes, but he did amazing. But as Jessica was saying, I kind of just felt like God was pulling me to this trip because I really feel that my calling is with children. And so I went on this trip 10 days prior of them leaving and had no idea how we were going to find the finances for the trip. So we fundraised, and we ended up getting pretty close to the dollar of what I needed, thanks to you guys. So I get to go on the next trip also. So thank you, guys. But I feel like my experience was a little bit different than theirs because I was kind of just thrown in the mix. And I feel like it was what I needed because I got to witness from the outside looking in. I worked a lot with the kids, which I believe gave me a view that many people miss. I got the ability to look from the outside. My family doesn't have a lot of money, and the money we do have, we use to feed others, help others in our lives, or something just simply comes up. We know that we are lucky to have the ability to do so and also have the money to pay our bills, but at times it's testing. I want to be greedy. I ask myself why. I question at times, where's the money going? What are people doing with their money? Why is this my responsibility? But even when I say, well, we are going to stop helping, or there's no way we can help, we always do, and there's always a way. I know that this is God's grace, and I know that it is always going to work out. But I look at the lives of the people that I got to visit, and they have so much less than us, but they give everything and anything that they have. They welcomed you, and they didn't question why. I've seen women cooking all day long, but they didn't eat until everybody was done eating and everything was cleaned up. And still, time and time again, they asked if I was hungry or wanted something. I told one of the women that her poncho was beautiful. She began to take it off and give it to me. I didn't take it, but I basically had to close her hands around it for her not to give it to me. Every time we would have the kids' snacks, they shared, and they would ask us if we wanted some. On our last day, another group drove back to the airport with us, and they had lost their luggage. They had clothed them, and they had kept giving them clothes and items until they had to ask them to stop. When the children were playing, if someone fell or got hurt, they stopped and they ran to them to help. They took care of the younger kids, even though they were not siblings. Me and Jessica kind of stole one of the kids from the village on accident. She was too small to tell us that she was not supposed to go. But the kids did not question it. They just picked her up because she was small and carried her to play with the rest of the kids. They watched each other. It wasn't a responsibility. It was just what they did. It has changed me. There is no question for me. There is no more why or where's the money. Money is money. It comes and it goes. I know that what we are doing is what we're supposed to do. It's just what we do. I have grown so much from what I have witnessed, not including their faith. It is so strong. On Sunday, it brought me to tears as women kneel to pray and they weep to God. I have seen acceptance beyond belief, and I feel so privileged to have seen God so strong. My life is forever changed. And I really feel like our calling is in Mexico. So hopefully, by the grace of God, we'll be there one day.
Thanks, Laura. I like this one. Does it sound better? Yeah. All right, so I'm just going to say a couple things because they pretty much covered everything. But I remember, Cornelius, show that picture and then show the next one. It was insane because, like, when we went and shared the stories, I want you to wrap your minds around, we were only on a road for about a quarter mile, for a lot of people, 100 yards, and then we broke off into these mountain paths. And, like, we're walking through the mountains to get to these houses on the edge of the mountains. And I remember thinking, like, what am I doing here? Like, not as in, like, I shouldn't be here, but, like, how did God get me to a point in my life where I'm on the top of this mountain walking in the, like,
it feels like, to the edge of the world to share the gospel with people. It was absolutely incredible. And like they said, man, the people in our church, we're going back at the end of July, the 1st of August. If you want to go back on this trip, if you feel like God's stirring your heart at all, just come. Don't feel like you're unprepared. It doesn't matter, because there's so many different things you can do, or just being there is such a huge encouragement to them. And walking, like when I was walking through these mountains, I'm like, what am I doing? I had another picture that's on the video I made. I'm like walking down this enormous valley, and it looks like the rainforest, and it's so far below me. And I'm like, if I fall, I'm going to die, right? And but these people are just walking around with kids and, you know, in tow, like it's no big deal because this is their life. And it was absolutely amazing. And then I just want to reiterate one more time. Like, very clearly when we were sharing these stories, we were just practicing. Like, we told them, Ubaldo had arranged for us to go to Christian homes for the most part so they didn't have the pressure of evangelism. Like, that was the point. There's no pressure now, so when we do it next time or when you do it, you'll have practice. And then there just happened to be people at homes that weren't saved, or a visitor was there, or Ubaldo's son just brought his friend who he didn't even know wasn't a Christian and sat down, and Ubaldo's son is a 15-year-old sharing the story, and like he just looks over and his friend's crying, and he's like, do you want to accept Christ? Like, he wasn't telling him the story. He was just telling the story. That's the power of the gospel. Do you understand that? Like, you don't have anything in you to save. These people were not giving great presentations. This is a lot of times the second time they'd ever even practiced it ever. For I think Ubaldo's son, it was the first time he'd ever talked through the story. You know he botched it up. You know it wasn't great. Like, it was probably choppy and it wasn't that good, but he heard the story of the gospel when it came to saying, like, practicing. He was practicing this. Would you like to accept Christ as your Savior and bring you back to God? And he's like, yeah, I would. And that wasn't even the point. Like, do you realize how amazing that is? That just hearing a story, like, we have this whole process of share your testimony and get to know them and all these things that you do and this other story you share, and then you do this, and then you do this. They weren't doing any of that. They just shared the story and people were giving their lives to Christ. It was absolutely amazing. Do you think, imagine what can happen if we get really motivated here and there to share the gospel like this. It's amazing what God was doing. And then last, I just wanted to point out, like, we had some time just to sit down with the pastors and just to talk with them. Because guys, like, what we're doing in Mexico is not different than what we're doing here. We're trying to build relationships with these people, get to know them so they can know how much we love them. And we got a time to sit down and talk with them. And I'm telling you, we keep saying the pastors. It was the pastors and leaders of the church. So there was like 50, 60 people there. And I said, give us feedback. They loved it. They loved the stories. They loved that we were there. They couldn't wait to tell their people. We're going back into July to empower their people to tell the story so that we're empowering the pastors. We're going to be there to support you, but the pastors and the leaders are going to teach their church members to tell the story so that, like, their whole church can go out together and share these stories together. Can you imagine if they had teams of people like this from all of the churches? And we say 8 churches. There's 4 churches, but there's 4 church plants or missions that they're trying to get going. And we're giving them these stories to empower them to evangelize more so they can get these churches actually going. And I'm talking about 8 churches. That sounds like a lot. It's across the mountains. Like, one of the places to get, like, the last church took us, like, what, 3 hours to get to? I mean, by car, these guys are walking sometimes 6 hours to share the gospel at some of these churches. They walk 6 hours to share the gospel every single week. And these guys who walk 6 hours to share the gospels are so pumped about these stories because it empowers them and it empowers their people. So if you would like to go on one of these trips, find me after the service. Talk to Ethan. Talk to Danielle or David. If you'd like to help with the kids next time, talk with Jessica or Laura. We want more people to go at the end of July, but there's going to be a lot more going, and God's doing just unbelievably amazing things. Do I have one more? And this is just, man, this was at the end. It was these our 2 translators on the end, Javier, Adrian, our team, and Ubaldo's the one with the stripes on his shirt. Man, Ubaldo's amazing. If you know the scripture at all, we keep calling Alfonso the Apostle Paul because he's the first one to come to this region. There was no road into the mountain, right? He walked all over the mountain to share the gospel with people and started Aposento Alto, who Ubaldo's now the pastor of. And Ubaldo was like his Timothy. Like, Ubaldo was the mentee to Alfonso's mentor. Man, we don't have time for this. One last thing. Do you know, to build the church at Aposento Alto, there was no roads. It's 4 miles up, straight up the mountain to this church from the bottom. 4 miles, basically straight up. They didn't have a road when they built the church 27 years ago. So they walked down to the river, put rocks and sand on their back, and then walked it 4 miles up this dense mountain through the woods. I mean, this is not like dense woods. Walked up the mountains, made the cement, made bricks, and then walked back down. That's how they built this church. This is the kind of people that we're talking about, and they're encouraged by us. It's incredible. So come. you want to come, come talk to us. Okay, I got to stop talking. We got to wrap up. I'm going to pray for us. The worship team's going to come up. We're going to do one song quickly and just a couple quick announcements, and we'll get out of here. This has run long today. God, we love you. Thank you so much for this team that was willing to go. We thank you so much for this church who gave so generously so that Laura could go and empower the rest of the missions team. And God, and we thank you for Apocental Alto and the other churches and the other pastors and all the people that came, and that, God, you exceeded our expectations in every way. God, how dare we go to think that we're just practicing, that we're not going to evangelize on this trip, that's next trip, and then we see four people saved almost by accident because you're powerful. God, help us to believe that you're powerful. Help us to start having huge prayers, believing that you're a huge God. God, I pray for Apocento Alto, that you would bless them, that you would encourage them, that you would increase their faith, their hope, and their love, and their passion for evangelism and for the lost. And I pray that that would drive the other churches, and God, that that would drive this church. God, we love you. We thank you so much for what you have done and continue to do. We pray that you do so much more. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.